Crash, behind the cabin's raggedy curtain, tried to tune his guitar. Several things got in the way of this simple procedure. Firstly, Blurt had realized what his customers really wanted, and praying forgiveness from his ancestors had spent more time gluing on bits of glittery stuff than he had on the actual functioning sections of the instrument. To put it another way, he'd knocked in a dozen nails and tied the strings to them. But this wasn't too much of a problem, because Crash himself had the musical talent of a blocked nostril. He looked at Jimbo, Noddy and Scum. Jimbo, now the bass player, Blurt, giggling hysterically, had used a bigger lump of wood and some fence wire, was holding up his hand hesitantly.
"What is it, Jimbo?"
"One of my guitar strings is broke."
"Well, you got five more, ain't you?"
"Yeah, but I doesn't know how to play them, like."
"You didn't know how to play six, right? So now you're a bit less ignorant."
Scum peered around the curtain.
"Crash?"
"Yes?"
"There's hundreds of people out there. Hundreds. A lot of them have got guitars, too, and they're sort of waving them in the air."
Insanity listened to the roar from the other side of the curtain. Crash did not have too many brain cells, and they often had to wave to attract one another's attention, but he had a tiny flicker of doubt that the sound that Insanity had achieved, while a good sound, was the sound that he'd heard last night in the drum. The sound made him want to scream and dance, while the other sound made him, well, made him want to scream and smash Scum's drum kit over its owner's head, quite frankly. Noddy took a peek between the curtains.
"Aye, there's a bunch of, they're wizards, right, in the front row," he said. "I'm pretty sure they're wizards, but, I mean..."
"You can tell, stupid," said Crash. "They've got pointy hats."
"Well, there's one with pointy hair," said Noddy.
The rest of Insanity applied eyes to the gap.
"Looks like a kind of unicorn spike made out of hair."
"What's he got on the back of his robe?" said Jimbo.
"It says, Born to Rune,"
said Crash, who was the fastest reader in the group and didn't need to use his finger at all.
"The skinny one's wearing a flared robe," said Noddy.
"He must be old. And they've all got guitars. Do you reckon they've come to see us?"
"Bound to have," said Noddy.
"That's a bodacious audience," said Jimbo.
"Yeah, that's right. Bodacious," said Scum. What's bodacious mean?"
Means it bodes," said Jimbo.
"Right. It looks like it's boding, all right."
Crash thrust aside his doubts.
"Let's go out there," he said, "and really show them what music with rooks in is about."
Ashfelt, Cliff and Glod sat in one corner of the dressing room. The roar of the crowd could be heard from here.
"Why's he not saying anything?" Ashfelt whispered.
"Dunno," said Glod.
Buddy was staring at nothing, with the guitar cradled in his arms. Occasionally he'd slap the casing very gently in time with whatever thoughts were sluicing through his head.
"He goes like that sometimes," said Cliff. "Just sits and looks at the air."
"Hey, they're shouting something out there," said Glod. "Listen."
The roar had a rhythm to it.
"Sounds like rocks, rocks, rocks," said Cliff.
The door burst open and Dibbler half ran, half fell in.
"You've got to get out there," he shouted. "Right now."
"I thought the Insanitary boys,
Glod began.
"Don't even ask," said Dibbler. "Come on, otherwise they'll wreck the place."
Ashfelt picked up the rocks.
"Okay," he said.
"No,"
said Buddy.
"What's this?"
said Dibbler.
"Nerves?"
"No. Music should be free. Free as the air and the sky."
Glod's head spun around. Buddy's voice had a faint suggestion of harmonics.
"Sure, right. That's what I said,"
said Dibbler.
"The guild..."
Buddy unfolded his legs and stood up.
"I expect people had to pay to get in here, didn't they?" he said.
Glod looked at the others. No one else seemed to have noticed it, but there was a twang on the edge of Buddy's words, a sibilance of strings.
"Oh, that, of course," said Dibbler. "Got to cover expenses. There's your wages, wear and tear on the floor, heating and lighting, depreciation."
The roar was louder now. It had a certain foot-stamping component. Dibbler swallowed. He suddenly had the look of a man prepared to make the supreme sacrifice.
"I could
maybe go up, maybe a dollar,
he said, each word fighting its way out of the strong room of his soul. If we go on stage now, I want us to do another performance, said Buddy. Glod glared suspiciously at the guitar.
Well, no problem. I can soon...
Dibbler began.
Free.
Free? The word got past Dibbler's teeth before they could snap shut. He rallied magnificently.
You don't want paying? Certainly, if...
Buddy didn't move. I mean, we don't get paid and people don't have to pay to listen. As many people as possible.
Free?
Yes.
Where's the profit in that?
An empty beer bottle vibrated off the table and smashed on the floor. A troll appeared in the doorway, or at least part of it did. It wouldn't be able to get into the room without ripping the doorframe out, but it looked as though it would think twice about doing so.
Mr. Chrysoprase says what's happening,
it growled.
Dibbler
began.
Mr. Chrysoprase don't like being kept waiting.
I know, he gets sad if he's kept waiting.
All right,
shouted Dibbler.
Free, and that's cutting me own throat. You know that, don't you?
Buddy played a chord. It seemed to leave little lights in the air.
Let's go,
he said softly.
I know this city,
Dibbler mumbled, as the band with rocks in hurried towards the vibrating stage.
Tell people something's free and you'll get thousands of them turning up.
Needing to eat,
said a voice in his head. It had a twang. Needing to drink. Needing to buy band with rocks in shirts. Dibbler's face very slowly rearranged itself into a grin.
A free festival,
he said.
Right. It's our public duty. Music should be free. And sausages in a bun should be a dollar each, mustard extra. Maybe $1.50. And that's cutting me own throat.
In the wings, the noise of the audience was a solid wall of sound.
There's lots of them, said Glod. I never played for that many in my entire life.
Ashfelt was arranging Cliff's rocks on the stage and getting massive applause and catcalls. Glod glanced up at Buddy. He hadn't let go of the guitar all this time. Dwarfs weren't given to deep introspection, but Glod was suddenly aware of a desire to be a long way from here, in a cave somewhere.
Best of luck, you guys, said a flat little voice behind them.
Jimbo was bandaging Crash's arm.
Thanks, said Cliff. What happened to you?
They threw something at us, said Crash.
What?
Noddy, I think.
What could be seen of Crash's face broke into a huge and terrible smile.
We done it, though, he said. We done music with Roxin, all right. That bit where Jimbo smashed his guitar, they loved that bit.
Smashed his guitar?
Yeah,
said Jimbo with the pride of the artist. On scum. Buddy had his eyes closed. Cliff thought he could see a very, very faint glow surrounding him, like a thin mist. There were tiny points of light in it. Sometimes Buddy looked very elvish. Ashfelt scurried off the stage.
Okay, all done,
he said. The others looked at Buddy. He was still standing with his eyes shut, as if he was asleep on his feet.
We'll get on out there, then,
said Glod.
Yeah, said Cliff. We'll get on out there, will we? Buddy?
Buddy's eyes snapped open suddenly.
Let's rock,
he whispered. Cliff had thought that the sound was loud before, but it hit him like a club as they trooped out of the wings. Glod picked up his horn. Cliff sat down and found his hammers. Buddy walked to the centre of the stage, and to Cliff's amazement, just stood there looking down at his feet. The cheering began to subside, and then died away altogether. The huge hall was filled with the hush of hundreds of people holding their breath. Buddy's fingers moved. He picked out three simple little chords, and then he looked up.
Hello, Ankh Morpork!
Cliff felt the music rise up behind him and rush him forward into a tunnel of fire and sparks and excitement. He brought his hammers down, and it was music with Roxin. C.M.O.T. Dibbler stood out in the street so that he didn't have to hear the music. He was smoking a cigar and doing calculations on the back of an overdue bill for stale buns.
Let's see. Okay, have it outside somewhere so there's no rent. Maybe 10,000 people, one sausage and a bun each at $1.50. Nah, say $1.75. Mustard 10 pence extra. 10,000 band with Roxin shirts at $5 each. Make that $10. add stall rental for other traders, because people who like music with rocks in could probably be persuaded to buy anything.
He was aware of a horse coming along the street. He paid it no attention until a female voice said, "How do I get in here?"
"No chance. Tickets all sold out," said Dibbler, without turning his head.
Even banned with Roxin posters, people had been offering $3 just for posters, and Chalky the Troll could knock out 100 at... He looked up. The horse, a magnificent white one, watched him incuriously. Dibbler looked around.
"Where'd she go?"
There were a couple of trolls lounging just inside the entrance. Susan ignored them. They ignored her. In the audience, Ponder Stibbons looked both ways and cautiously opened a wooden box. The stretched string inside began to vibrate.
"This is all wrong," he shouted in Ridcully's ear. "This is not according to the laws of sound."
"Maybe they're not laws," screamed Ridcully. People a foot away couldn't hear him. "Maybe they're just guidelines."
"No, there have to be laws."
Ridcully saw the Dean try to climb on the stage in the excitement. Ashfalt's huge troll feet landed heavily on his fingers.
"Oh, I say, good shot," said the Arch-Chancellor.
A prickling sensation on the back of his neck made him look around. Although the cavern was crowded, a space seemed to have formed in the floor. People were pressed together, but somehow this circle was inviolate as a wall. In the middle of it was the girl he'd seen in the drum. She was walking across the floor, holding her dress daintily. Ridcully's eyes watered. He stepped forward, concentrating. You could do almost anything if you concentrated. Anyone could have stepped into the circle if their senses had been prepared to let them know it was there. Inside the circle, the sound was slightly muted. He tapped her on the shoulder. She spun round, startled.
"Good evening," said Ridcully.
He looked her up and down and then said,
"I'm Mustram Ridcully, Arch-Chancellor of Unseen University. I can't help wondering who you are."
The girl looked panicky for a moment.
"Well, technically, I suppose I'm Death."
Technically?
"Yes, but not on duty at the moment."
"Oh, very glad to hear that."
There was a shriek from the stage as Ashfelt threw the lecturer in recent runes into the audience, which applauded.
"Can't say I've seen that much of Death," said Ridcully, "but in so far as I have, he's tended to be, well, he, to start with, and a good deal thinner."
"He's my grandfather."
"Ah. Really? Ah, I didn't even know he was,
Ridcully stopped.
Well, fancy that. Your grandfather. And you're in the family firm?"
"Shut up, you stupid man," said Susan. "Don't you dare patronise me. You see him?" She pointed to the stage where Buddy was in mid-riff. "He's going to die soon because of silliness, and if you can't do anything about it, go away." Ridcully glanced at the stage. When he looked back, Susan had vanished. He made a mighty effort and thought he caught a glimpse of her a little way off, but she knew he was looking for her, and he had no chance of finding her now. Ashfelt got back into the dressing room first. There is something very sad about an empty dressing room. It's like a discarded pair of underpants, which it resembles in a number of respects. It's seen a lot of activity. It may even have witnessed excitement and a whole gamut of human passions. And now there's nothing much left but a faint smell. The little troll dumped the bag of rocks on the floor and bit the top off a couple of beer bottles. Cliff entered. He got halfway across the floor and then fell over, hitting the boards with every part of his body at once. Glod stepped over him and flopped onto a barrel. He looked at the beer bottles. He took off his helmet. He poured the beer into the helmet, then he let his head flop forward. Buddy entered and sat down in the corner, leaning against the wall, and Dibbler followed.
"Well, what can I say? What can I say?"
he said.
"Don't ask us," said Cliff, from his prone position. "How should we know?"
"That was magnificent," said Dibbler. "What's up with the dwarf? Is he drowning?"
Glod reached out an arm, without looking, smashed the top off another bottle of beer and poured it over his head.
"Mr. Dibbler," said Cliff.
"Yes. I think we want to talk. Just us, like, the band, if you don't mind."
Dibbler looked from one to the other. Buddy was staring at the wall. Glod was making bubbling noises. Cliff was still on the floor.
"Okay," he said, and then added brightly, "Buddy, the free performance, Great idea. I'll start organising it right away, and you can do it just as soon as you get back from your tour. Right. Well, I'll just...
He turned to leave and walked into Cliff's arm, which was suddenly blocking the doorway.
Tour? What tour?
Dibbler backed off a little.
A few places, Quirm, Pseudopolis, Stolat.
He looked around at them.
Didn't you want that?
We'll talk about that later, said Cliff.
He pushed Dibbler out of the door and slammed it shut. Beer dripped off Glod's beard.
Tour? 3 more nights of this?
What's the problem? Said Ashfelt. It was great. Everyone was cheering. You did 2 hours. I had to keep picking him off the stage. I never felt so...
He stopped.
That's it, really, said Cliff. The thing is, I go on that stage, I sit down not knowing even what we're going to do. Next minute, Buddy's playing something on that thing. Next I'm going, ba-bam, bam, boom, cha-ba-bum. I don't know what I'm playing. It just comes in my head and down my arms.
Yes, said Glod. Me too. Seems to me I'm getting stuff out of that horn I never put in there.
And it ain't like proper playing, said Cliff. That's what I'm saying. It's more like being played.
You've been in show business a long time, right? Said Glod to Ashfelt. Yep. Been there, done it, seen them all. You ever seen an audience like that? I've seen them throw flowers and cheer at the opera house.
Just flowers. Some woman threw her clothing at the stage. That's right, it landed on my head.
And when Miss Va-va-voom did the feather dance down at the Skunk Club in Brewer Street, the whole audience rushed the stage when she was down to the last feather.
That was like this, was it?
No, the troll admitted. I've got to say, I ain't never seen an audience so hungry. Not even for Miss Va-va-voom. And they were pretty damn peckish then, I can tell you. Of course, no one threw underwear onto the stage. She used to throw it off the stage.
There's something else, said Cliff. There's 4 people in this room, and only 3 of them's talking.
Buddy looked up.
The music's important, he mumbled.
It ain't music, said Glod. Music don't do this to people. It don't make them feel like they've been put through a ringer. I was sweating so much I'm going to have to change my vest any day now.
He rubbed his nose. Also, I looked at the audience and I thought, they paid money to get in here. I bet it came to more than $10. Ashfelt held up a slip of paper.
Found this ticket on the floor, he said.
Glod read it.
$1.50, he said. 600 people at $1.50 each. $400.
$900, said Buddy, in the same flat tone. But the money isn't important.
The money's not important. You keep on saying that. What kind of a musician are you?
There was still a muted roar from outside.
You want to go back playing for 6 people in some cellar somewhere after this? Said Buddy. Who's the most famous horn player there ever was, Glod?
Brother Charnel, said the dwarf promptly. Everyone knows that. He stole the altar gold from the Temple of Ofla and had it made into a horn and played magical music until the gods caught up with him and pulled his...
Right, said Buddy, but if you went out there now and asked who the most famous horn player is, would they remember some felonious monk? Or would they shout for Glod Glodson?
Glod hesitated.
Right, said Buddy. Think about that. A musician has to be heard. You can't stop now. We can't stop now.
Glod waved a finger at the guitar.
It's that thing, he said. It's too dangerous.
I can handle it.
Yes, but where's it going to end?
It's not how you finish that matters, said Buddy. It's how you get there.
That sounds elvish to me.
The door burst open again.
Said Dibbler. Boys, if you don't come back and play something else, then we're in the deep brown...
Can't play, said Glod. I've run out of breath through lack of money.
I said $10, didn't I?
Said Dibbler.
Each,
said Cliff. Dibbler, who hadn't expected to get away with less than 100, waved his hands in the air.
Gratitude, is it? You want me to cut me own throat?
"'We'll help, if you like,' said Cliff.
"'All right, all right, all right. $30,' said Dibbler, "'and I'll go without me tea.'
Cliff looked at Glod, who was still digesting the thing about the most famous horn player in the world.
"'There's lots of dwarfs and trolls in the audience,' said Cliff.
"'Cavern deep, mountain high?' said Glod.
"'No,'
said Buddy.
"'What then?'
"'I'll think of something.'
The audience spilled out into the street. The wizards gathered around the dean, snapping their fingers. "'Wella, wella, wella, wella!' sang the dean happily.
"'It's gone midnight,' said the lecturer in recent runes, snapping his fingers, "'and I don't care a bit. What shall we do now?'
"'We could have a rumble,' said the dean.
"'That's true,' said the chair of indefinite studies. "'We did miss dinner.'
"'We missed dinner?' said the senior wrangler. "'Wow! That's music with rocks in. We just don't care!'
"'No, I meant—'
the dean paused. He wasn't quite sure, now he came to really think about it, what he had meant. "'It's a long walk back to the university,' he conceded. "'I suppose we could at least stop for a coffee or something.'
"'Maybe a doughnut or two,' said recent runes.
"'And perhaps some cake,'
said the chair.
"'I could just fancy some apple pie,' said the senior wrangler.
"'And some cake!'
"'Coffee,' said the dean. "'Yes, a coffee bar. That's right.'
"'What's a coffee bar?' said the senior wrangler.
"'Like a chocolate bar,' said recent runes.
The missed dinner, hitherto forgotten, was beginning to loom large in everyone's stomachs. The dean looked down at his shiny new leather robe. Everyone had said how good it was. They'd admired Born to Rune. His hair was right, too. He was thinking of shaving off his beard, but just leaving the side bits because that felt right.
And coffee. Yes, coffee was in there somewhere. Coffee was all part of it.
And there was the music. That was in there. That was everywhere. But there was something else, too. Something missing. He wasn't sure what it was. Only that he'd know it if he ever saw it. It was very dark in the alley behind the cavern, and only the keenest sighted would have seen several figures pressed against the wall. The occasional glint of a tarnished sequin would indicate to those who knew about such things that these were the Musicians Guild crack enforcers, the Grisham Ford Close Harmony singers. Unlike most of the people employed by Mr. Cleet, they did, in fact, genuinely have some musical talent. They'd also been in to see the band.
"'Do-wop-boo-wop, do-wop-boo-wop,'
said the thin one.
"'Bub-bub-bub-bub-bub-bub,'
said the tall one. There's always a tall one.
"'Cleet's right. If they keep pulling in audiences like that, everyone else is out of the show,'
said Grisham.
"'Oh, yeah,' said the bass man.
"'When they come through that door,'
three more knives slipped from their sheaths.
"'Well, just take your time from me.'
They heard the sound of feet on the stairs. Grisham nodded.
A one, a two, a one, two, three.
Gentlemen!
They pivoted. A dark figure stood behind them, holding a glowing scythe in its hands. Susan smiled horribly.
Take it from the top?
Oh, no, said the bass man. Ashfelt unbolted the door and stepped out into the night.
Hey, what was that?
He said.
What was what?
Said Dibbler.
"'I thought I heard some people running away.'
The troll stepped forward. There was a ting. He reached down and picked up something.
"'And whoever it was dropped this.'
"'Just some item or other,'
said Dibbler loudly.
"'Come along, boys. You don't have to go back to any flophouse tonight. It's the grits for you.'
"'That's a troll hotel, isn't it?'
said Glod suspiciously.
"'Troll-ish,'
said Dibbler, waving a hand irritably.
"'Hey, I've been in there once doing cabaret,' said Cliff. "'They got nearly everything, water out of taps in nearly every room. "'A speaking tube so you can holler your meal order right down to the kitchen, "'and these guys with actual shoes on, who bring it right to you. The works!'
"'Treat yourself,'
said Dibbler.
"'You boys can afford it.'
"'And then there's this tour, is there?'
said Glod sharply.
"'We can afford that too, can we?'
"'Oh, I shall help you out with that,'
said Dibbler expansively.
Tomorrow you go to Pseudopolis, that'll take you 2 days. Then you can come back via Stolat and Quirm and be back here on Wednesday for the festival. Great idea, that. Giving something to the community. I've always been in favour of giving to the community. It's very good for the community. I'll get it all organised while you're away, OK? And then...
He put one arm around Buddy's shoulders and another around Glod's head.
Genua, Clatch, Hersheba, Chimera, her Wonderland, maybe even the counterweight continent. They're talking about discovering it again real soon now. Great opportunities for the right people. With your music and my unerring business sense, the world is our mollusk. Now, you just go off with Asphalt. The best rooms now. Nothing's too much for my boys. And get some sleep without worrying about the bill.
Thank you, said Glod.
You can pay it in the morning.
The band with Roxin shambled away in the direction of the best hotel. Dibbler heard Cliff say,
What's a mollusk?
It's like 2 plates of precipitated calcium carbonate with the salty, slimy, fishy thing in the middle.
Sounds tasty. You don't have to eat that bit in the middle, do you?
When they'd gone, Dibbler looked at the knife he'd taken from Asphalt. It had sequins on it. Yes, a few days with the lads out of the way was definitely a good move. On his perch in the gutter above, the Death of Rats gibbered to himself. Ridcully walked slowly out of the cabin. Only a light drift of used tickets on the steps bore witness to the hours of music. He felt like someone watching a game who didn't know the rules. For example, the boy had been singing, what was it, Rave In? What the hell did that mean? Raving, yes, he could understand that, and in the Dean's case it was perfectly accurate. Rave In? But everyone else had seemed to know what was meant. And then there had been, as far as he could remember, a song about not stepping on someone's shoes. Fair enough, sensible suggestion, no one wanted their feet trodden on, but why a song asking people to avoid doing so should have such an effect, Ridcully was at a loss to understand. And as for the girl... Ponder bustled up, clutching his box.
"'I've got nearly all of it, Arch-Chancellor!'
he shouted. Ridcully glanced past him. There was Dibbler, still bearing a tray of unsold Band with Roxin shirts.
Yes, fine, Mr. Stibbons.
Shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up,' he said.
"'Jolly good. Let's get back home.'
"'Good evening, Arch-Chancellor,' said Dibbler.
"'Oh, why, hello, Throat!' said Ridcully. Didn't see you there.
What's in that box?
Oh, nothing, nothing at all.
It's amazing, said Ponder, full of the undirected excitement of the true discoverer and idiot. We can trap the...
My word, clumsy old me, said Ridcully, as the young wizard clutched at his leg. Here, let me take that totally innocent device you have there.
But the box had tumbled out of Ponder's arms. It hit the street before Ridcully could catch it, and the lid flew off. The music spilled out into the night.
"'How did you do that?' said Dibbler. "'Is it magic?'
"'The music lets itself be trapped, so you can hear it again and again,' said Ponder. "'And I think you did that on purpose, sir.'
"'You can hear it again and again,' said Dibbler.
"'What, by just opening a box?'
"'Yes,'
said Ponder.
"'No,' said Ridcully.
"'Yes, you can,' said Ponder. "'I showed you, Arch-Chancellor, don't you remember?'
"'No,' said Ridcully.
"'Any kind of box,' said Dibbler, in a voice choked with money.
"'Oh, yes, but you have to stretch a wire inside so the music has somewhere to live and... Ow! Ouch! Ow!
"'Can't think what's come over me with these sudden muscular spasms,' said Ridcully. "'Come, Mr. Stibbons, let us not waste any more of Mr. Dibbler's valuable time.'
"'Oh, you're not wasting it,' said Dibbler. "'Boxes full of music, eh?'
"'We'll take this one,' said Ridcully, snatching it up. "'It's an important magical experiment.'
He frog-marched Ponder away, which was a little hard because the youth was bent double and wheezing.
"'What did you have to go and do that for?'
"'Mr. Stibbons, I know you to be a man who seeks to understand the universe,
Here's an important rule. Never give a monkey the key to the banana plantation. Sometimes you can just see an accident waiting to... Oh, no. He let Ponder go and waved vaguely up the street. Got any theories about that, young man? Something golden brown and viscous was oozing out onto the street from what was just possibly, behind the mounds of the stuff, a shop. As the two wizards watched, there was a tinkle of glass, and the brown substance began to emerge from the second floor. Ridcully stamped forward and scooped up a handful, leaping back before the wall could reach him. He sniffed at it.
"Is it some ghastly emanation from the dungeon dimensions?" said Ponder.
"Shouldn't think so. Smells like coffee," said Ridcully.
"Coffee?"
"Coffee-flavoured froth, anyway. Now, why is it I have this feeling that there's going to be wizards in there somewhere?"